Oh, Connecticut, how sleepy of a place you are. Connecticut exudes perceptions of a preppy, white-collar state with expensive boats and yachts littering its seashore, where the only problem is matching your Sperry's to your sailing jacket. Yet, just like any other state, or any other place in this world for that matter, there are the secrets and hidden lives that people may lead. Don't forget, Connecticut is the home to such murderous names as Michael Ross, Emmanuel Webb, William Howell, Stephen Hayes, and Joshua Komisarjevsky. The case we will discuss today, which we will call Body Chipper, comes from our home state of Connecticut. This case inspired the movie Fargo, and one of the most notorious and memorable scenes from any thriller made in the last 30 years. To set the scene, the main character hired a hitman to kidnap and murder his wife so he could collect the ransom money. To dispose of her body, the hitman used a wood chipper to shred her up into millions of pieces in a pile of mush. Fargo takes place in Minnesota during the winter. Snow covered the ground. The pure white snow is painted red with the woman's diced up body. The main investigator just happens onto the scene as it's taking place. She was shocked and in disbelief, but she ended up getting the bad guy. It was horrifying, yet you couldn't take your eyes away from it. The actual events of this murder that happened in not so sleepy Connecticut are a bit different, but still interesting enough that Forensic Files made this case its first episode ever. Season 1, Episode 1. The story of Hella Crafts and her husband, Richard Crafts. Richard killed his wife and disposed of her body by running it through a wood chipper. He wasn't caught red-handed like his movie counterpart, but the story is still just as gruesome. This case truly deserved the honor of being the very first episode of Forensic Files, as the evidence that was found had to literally be examined under a microscope. There was no body in the practical sense of a murder, but fragments of a body, such as 3 ounces of human tissue, the crown of a single broken tooth, a fragment of a fingernail covered in pink nail polish, and 2,660 bleached blonde human hairs. They also found a chainsaw in Lake Zor covered in hair and blood which matched Hella's DNA. Don't underestimate sleepy states, or sleepy towns, or even sleepy people. You never know what secrets may be held. You may never know anyone fully. This story revolves around a woman named Hella Crafts. She was born Hella Lork Nielsen on July 7th, 1947, in Charlottenlund, Denmark. She was an only child and was described as vibrant, outgoing, who enjoyed school. She had a happy disposition and made friends easily. Hella attended college in England and worked as an au pair in France. While she was living there, she got a job working as a stewardess for Capital Airways. She loved the job so much that when she saw that there was an opening for a stewardess position for Pan Am in Copenhagen, she went for it. Hella, with her bright personality and professional demeanor, stood out to the people at Pan Am. She was one of 8 candidates selected out of a group of 200, and she was sent to Miami to train. It was easy for her to finish the course because of her prior experience. And while in Miami, Hella stayed at a motel near the airport that other airline employees would often stay. She was under the same roof with male and female co-workers and often had romantic liaisons with male pilots. The environment was like a college dorm. Parties and socializing with others in the airline business. Everyone knew everyone. This motel is where she met her future husband and pilot, Richard Crafts, on May 24, 1969, while Hella was waiting for a flight. Richard Krauss was born in New York City on December 20th, 1937. He had two older sisters. His father, John Krauss, was a very successful businessman in Manhattan. John, like any other businessman in New York, wanted to live in the suburbs and move the family to Darien, Connecticut. Darien is a very affluent town, one of the richest towns in the state. John Krauss was a former World War I pilot, and Richard wanted to live up to his father's standards. He attended private school, but wasn't successful. He did attend college for a few years, but dropped out to join the Marines. He became a helicopter pilot while in the Marines in the 1950s. He served in Korea and Japan, and while there, flew a few planes for Air America, which was a recognized branch of the CIA. He did have a few missions with Air America, and was even wounded while flying a mission over Laos. He did play up his involvement with the CIA, but nothing can be confirmed nor denied because of how secretive the CIA is. He eventually made his way back to America in 1966. When Hella and Richard met in 1969, Richard was already engaged to another woman. Hella didn't mind that, though. They continued their relationship, even though Richard kept on seeing other women. Hella didn't mind that she was the other woman, but was upset when Richard continued his cheating ways while with her. This caused many fights, even some in public. Hella's friends did not like Richard for this reason, and were always suspicious of him. To top it off, he was very quick to anger. Hella and Richard married in New Hampshire in November of 1975, after Hella became pregnant. They moved to Newtown, Connecticut in 1976. There, they had three children in total over the next few years. She returned to her job as a stewardess and hired 19-year-old Dawn Marie Thomas as an au pair, so going back to work wouldn't be an issue. Between the two of them, Richard and Hella made over $125,000 a year, so they were doing very well. Richard spent a lot of his income on his hobby of collecting guns. He had all sorts in his collection, including shotguns, handguns, high-powered rifles, semi-automatic weapons, crossbows, hand grenades, and thousands of rounds of ammunition. Hella wasn't too happy about him having so many guns and how he would often disappear for days going to gun shows. He also spent a lot of money on landscaping equipment. He spent it on tractors, mowers, and a very expensive backhoe, but they were never used. They just sat in the front yard collecting rust. The neighbors would complain about the eyesore of this collection of broken machinery. Now, in a town like Newtown, neighbors don't like eyesores. Despite his full-time commitment at Eastern Airlines and all of the work he was doing on the house, he became an auxiliary police officer in Newtown. He was not paid for this position, but it was something he took pride in. He would hang out at the police station, even while off duty, and respond to calls without authorization. He later became a police officer for Southbury, Connecticut. He paid his own way for training, and even bought an old Crown Victoria, and installed radios, antennas, police lights, and a siren with his own money. He would also take small security jobs. People were confused why this successful airline pilot would want or need to work at such low-paying jobs. During all of this time, Richard was still seeing women on the side. Hella tolerated it for the children, but became fed up with it in 1986. She retained a divorce attorney and hired a private investigator named Keith Mayo to gather information on Richard for the divorce. On November 18th, 1986, Hella's friends dropped her off at her home in Newtown after she had a long flight from Frankfurt, West Germany. She was never seen again. On November 19th, the au pair, Dawn, was woken up at 6 a.m. by Richard. He told Dawn that Hella was driving to his sister's house, and they would all meet her there later. Dawn thought this was strange because there had been a horrible snowstorm that night, and visibility was awful. But Richard persisted because there was a power outage. They all drove over to Richard's sister's house. He dropped them off, and he left almost immediately. Hella was not there, and Richard did not come back to pick them up until 7 p.m. that night. Richard's stories on where Hella was were inconsistent. One reply was, "I don't know." Another was that she was in Denmark with her sick mother. He even told one of his friends that Hella was in the Canary Islands with a best friend, Helen Dixon. There was no one consistent story. There were also pieces of carpet cut out and missing from Richard and Hella's bedroom. Richard said that he had spilled kerosene on the rug and it needed to be replaced. Newtown police gave Richard a lie detector test because of their suspicions. He passed the test, but some detectives didn't believe the results and thought it was odd that a professional airline pilot liked to play cop and took jobs for cheap. The investigators also listened to Hella's friend's suspicions, and the testimony from Dawn Thomas cast doubts on Kraft's story. They called Richard back for an interview. On December 11th, investigators Lieutenant Michael DeJoseph and Detective Robert Tvardzik conducted an interview with Richard Kraft. Richard, did you know your wife hired a private investigator?
No.
Did you know that the PI has documented your relationship with a New Jersey woman?
No.
Why would your wife tell her friends she was afraid for herself regarding serving you divorce papers and to tell them to check on her if something happens?
I cannot imagine her saying this. It is completely out of character for her to say this.
On November 18th, when Hella came home, when and why did she leave?
Those answers are in my statement.
So what's the story with the bedroom rug? Apparently you removed it or cut some pieces out of it. Can you explain this to me?
All the rugs in the house are being removed and replaced.
What was spilled on the rug in your bedroom?
Kerosene.
Did you cut pieces out of the rug?
Yes. 2 feet at a time. It's easier to remove it that way.
What did you do with the rug? You took it out of the bedroom?
Dumped bedroom rug in the Newtown landfill 1 week ago. It was blue in color.
Why have you been telling everyone different things about Hella being missing? Like her mother being sick?
I didn't want to say my wife was gone, and I didn't know where she was.
Has Hella received any mail since she's been missing?
No. She's gotten no letters since she left. She usually gets about 2 letters a week.
Kraft had an answer for everything. He was calm and cooperative, yet guarded. His apathetic demeanor made the investigators suspect him even more. He seemed robotic, and it was like he had rehearsed these answers beforehand. Something didn't sit right with them. When Keith Mayo, the private detective hired by Hella, learned that she was missing, he immediately suspected Richard. Mayo went above and beyond to try to prove his theory. He asked colleagues and friends what they had thought about his case, and they agreed that something didn't add up. They didn't understand why Richard had so many stories and why Hella was missing. The police didn't seem like they wanted Mayo's help, but Mayo wanted to solve this case, so he needed evidence to support his suspicions to present to the state police. Mayo decided that he wanted to try to find the pieces of the rug at the local dump. He believed the rug pieces would contain blood evidence. He spoke to the trash company who did the route that the Crafts lived on. He found out that these rug pieces were at a landfill in Canterbury, Connecticut, almost 2 hours away. With some help, he found a portion of a rug that was identical to the rug in Richard Kraft's bedroom, and it had what looked to be human blood on it. A piece of rug was taken to the state police laboratory in Meriden, which was led by none other than the famous Dr. Henry Lee. You may know him from many true crime cases, but most notably from the O.J. Simpson case. Unfortunately, Dr. Lee did not find any blood on the carpet pieces. Even though the rug evidence didn't turn out how Mayo wanted it, he did bring attention to the case. The Danbury Times published the first story about the case where Newtown Police Chief Louis Marchese told reporters that it was a missing person case. But Keith Mayo spoke to the same reporter and told him that she did not disappear on her own accord. Pressure was building on the Newtown Police, and they received tons of criticism, so the state attorney's office wanted it to be handed over to the state police. The Western District Major Crimes Unit began to investigate the case further. They found some interesting purchases and phone records. On November 13th, Richard bought a large-capacity Westinghouse freezer at an appliance store in Danbury. In the same billing period, he rented some type of machinery at Darien Rentals for $900. On Christmas Day, 1986, a search warrant was executed. For days and weeks leading up to the warrant, the police put together an 11-page affidavit listing dozens of supporting facts to back up their theory of Richard's guilt. His ever-changing story as to where Hella was one of the biggest reasons. On Christmas Day in 1986, police learned that Richard and his children were in Florida for the holidays. Dr. Lee agreed to be present and oversee the collection of evidence at the Kraft residence. When they entered, the house was in complete disarray. Furniture was thrown all over the place, dirty clothes lay everywhere, dirty dishes and kitchen utensils were in the sink and all over the countertops. Mattresses were on the floor in the living room, along with boxes of belongings. They took all of Richard's guns, because any one of them could have been used to kill Hella. The investigators and Dr. Lee were there for days. Dr. Lee performed a luminol test in different locations of the Crafts house, and the tests were positive for the presence of blood. In the evidence collected, there were towels that had type O positive blood on them, which was Hella's blood type. But with all of this evidence, they still had no answer for where Hella's body was. That $900 machine rental that I spoke about earlier, that was confirmed to be a wood chipper. On November 19th, Richard rented and picked up the Bush Bandit wood chipper from Darien Rentals. With this knowledge, investigators were starting to put pieces, literally, together on where Hella's body could be. The detectives from the Major Crime Squad found a man named Joseph Hine, who was a utility worker from Southbury, Connecticut. Joseph told a story of witnessing a wood chipper in a U-Haul parked on the side of the road in the middle of the night. He pointed out to the exact spot where he saw the U-Haul and the wood chipper on the shore of Lake Zor. Detectives found piles of wood chips on the banks of the river. Along the pieces of the shredded items found, the detectives found a few pieces of mail, and on one of the envelopes, the detectives found the name of Hella Crafts. Within an hour, a search team was there looking for more hard evidence. They found more mail with Hella's name on them. The blonde hair, bone fragments, fabrics, plastic items, wood chips, and some unidentified material. The detectives went back to the machine rental place where Crafts rented the wood chipper. They secured the paperwork from Richard's Rentals, and it just so happens, the exact wood chipper was there in the rear parking lot. The detectives had it towed to the state police forensics lab, where they could have it examined. The search at Lake Zor continued, and they had dive teams searching the waters near where the wood chipper and evidence had been found. The divers had found a chainsaw on the bottom of the river in the mud. The serial number had been filed off. Then they started finding hard evidence that Hella had been murdered. They found a piece of a human toe, a fragment of a finger, and part of a tooth. In total, they had found 2,660 strands of blonde hair, 69 slivers of human bone, 5 droplets of human blood, 2 teeth, a piece of a human skull, 3 ounces of human tissue, a portion of a human finger, 1 fingernail, and 1 portion of a toenail. Hella Crafts had been found. On January 11th, an arrest warrant was issued in Newtown Court for Richard Crafts. At 9 p.m., several state troopers surrounded Crafts' home and called him on the phone. They demanded he come out and surrender. Crafts replied that he was tired and that he'd take care of it in the morning. Police insisted that he surrender. Finally, after hours of negotiating, Richard Crafts emerged from his home around 12:30 a.m. and surrendered. The trial was moved to New London, Connecticut due to the amount of publicity on the case. The media in Newtown had sensationalized the story, making it hard to find impartial jurors. Dr. Lee testified about the collection and analysis of thousands of pieces of evidence found in and around Lake Zor. Even though all of the pieces of evidence were small, Dr. Lee was able to determine that the pieces were cut with a heavy type cutting edge that produced a crushing and cutting force. All of the bone, human tissue, and hair were all mixed together with wood chips and vegetative debris. And most importantly, they were all cut with the same machine. The chainsaw found at the bottom of Lake Zora was one of the pieces of evidence that were the most damning. Forensic scientists were able to find remnants of human tissue, blonde hair, and a number of blue fibers in the teeth of the blade. The blue fibers matched the fibers in the blue rug in the Crafts bedroom. Scientists were able to restore the serial number that had been scratched off and trace it back to Richard Crafts. The tooth fragment was what sealed Richard Crafts' fate. The analysis proved conclusively that Hella Crafts' remains were found at Lake Zor. One tiny fragment of tooth, with a piece of jawbone still attached, was the most major piece of evidence found in the case. The pathologist testified that the tooth was removed from the mouth with traumatic force that sheared it off and took the bone with it. There was a metal crown attached. The crown was painstakingly compared to Hella's dental records. And there was a medical absolute certainty that the crown belonged to Hella Crafts. On June 23rd, the jury took the case and started to go over evidence and testimony for 2 weeks to reach a verdict. One juror held out for a not guilty verdict. The others were frustrated with him, saying it was like dealing with a child, and this resulted in a mistrial being declared. On September 7th, 1989, a second trial opened. The trial was pretty much a copy of the first, the same witnesses, the same evidence, everything the same. When the case finally went to the jury on November 20th, they only took 8 hours to determine a guilty verdict. Crafts showed no emotion when the verdict was announced on November 21st, 1989, almost 3 years to the day when Hella was murdered. Richard Crafts received 99 years in state prison. This all goes to show things always come out in the open, and the truth is always found. Little tiny fragments of a human body were found in and around a large body of water. Nothing is ever as secret as you suspect. Nothing is ever hidden or made to disappear. The truth will always be found. Even a wood chipper cannot hide your crime. But people still try. And we still have stories to tell for podcasts and movies such as Fargo.
And Criminal AF.
Executive producers for this episode are Christine Rivera, Beth Davis, and Dusty J. Hicks. Associate producers are Paul Hodge, Noah Schultz, Brooke Morgan, Bethany Cooper, and Terry Burke Wolin. Producers are Stephen Day, Trent Gobble, J.D. Driscoll, Devin Dean, Chantal Sizlik, Jan O'Donnell, Jessica Lloyd, Lissa Perello, Jenny Crawford, Alicia Knight, Laura Shin, Maria Celine, and Beth Esselman. This episode of Criminal AF Direct was narrated and produced by me, Dave Jari. Special thank you to Dorothy Jari for researching and writing this episode. For an unfiltered, interactive, not safe for work version of this episode, follow Criminal AF, hosted by me and co-host Garrett Quarter. Be sure to follow at Criminal AF Pod on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and at Criminal AF Podcast on TikTok. Signing off from Studio Chloroform. Keep your head on a swivel and take care until next time.